feel your love. I feel time is up. When I was a child, I never knew enough what that do to me. The wave of love is a transient hug. Water's the shell and we are the nut. A tie or a hand arch out of the barrel. Look at all the peaches. How do you celebrate? You can't appear inside of nowhere.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Kick Arts, Auckland's comprehensive art show, brought to you every Sunday night at Planet FM 104.6 or live streamed at planetaudio.org.nz. Now, that was Alice Harding with The Barrel. She won the Silver Scroll this week, which was just Ah, well deserved, I thought. She is such a cool character and such beautiful music, and she said that she'll be, with her $5,000 prize money that she won, she'll be making the same mistake again and continuing to make more music, which made me very, very happy because I'm a huge fan. And I might close the show actually with the cover of her... of that song. One of the amazing things that they do at the Silver Scrolls, which makes it one of my favourite nights of the year, is the top five Silver Scroll nominees get their songs covered by a different act each. This year that was curated by Nathan Haynes. Last year it was Bikrunga, but with Nathan Haynes this year, obviously it had a real jazz feel to it, and I would absolutely recommend going and having a check on their up on RNZ, but you can also find them on all of the usual media platforms, on Under the Radar and The Spinoff and all sorts of places. If you just Google RNZ Silver Scrolls, the videos come up and they're well worth the watch. Would you not agree, Liz?
I would agree. they're great. Yeah, they're really good.
Welcome back to the studio.
Thanks.
Lane and Liz from Those Lethals.
Can I grab this one?
You can totally grab that one. We're just doing a little mic swap.
There we are.
Oh, cool. You can also move... You can move that one along. You could have three mics.
Whoa. I think one will do.
Oh, yeah, cool. And Liz, you can actually move that blue one a little bit closer to you. That would be...
Hello.
Cool.
We got there. It was a journey.
But we're here.
But we're here together, and that's the most important thing. Much like we're also on a McDonald's journey, Lane and I. So if I disappear for a second, when you hear me in about 10 minutes go, and now we're going to do a song, it's actually because I'm getting McDonald's for Uber Eats.
Yeah, and I'm getting one hash brown.
It's going to be, I hope, like, will it be a good hash brown?
It's kind of weird talking to you, like, at this angle.
I'm going
to
move this.
I'll do this as well. And then it's...
This is, oh, that's better.
I'll do it like this. I'm sort of, that's good, right?
For the people not in the studio, which is everybody listening, we were getting blocked by kind of mic stands, but now we're looking deep into each other's eyes.
Yeah, feels good.
Lane needs a lot of eye contact. He's emotional needs.
Yeah, I'm a needy guy.
Is this actually something that you talk about?
Actually, I don't think we do make a lot of eye contact when we practice and perform, do we?
Yeah, we probably do with making more. Like, whilst we perform, I kind of intentionally avoid it.
Yeah,
because it gets a bit too intense, you know?
And when you're in a male-female band, people always assume that you're a couple.
Yeah.
But Liz's workaround on that is she tells everyone that we're brother and sister, just to make crystal clear that we're not a thing.
Cute.
I don't think it really helps the music or the image of the band, and we don't look that alike either.
No. It's a tough one to sell.
Yeah.
So you guys have been playing together a long time now.
Yes.
Or a little long time.
Years.
Years?
Yeah, that's a long time. Like 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And has that always been as Those Lethals?
It has, pretty much, isn't it? Yeah.
Most of the time, except for like the first few jams where it was just like, let's try and have a jam. But
when we first met, I was more like looking for a band to, you know, be like my music and my songwriting. And then as soon as Lane and I started playing together, and we kind of liked each other's songwriting point of view, and then decided to just collaborate, which I always like collaborating in bands. I don't think I've been in like one or two bands where I've been just like the lead singer, but I always like having another singer or songwriter to collaborate with. Yeah.
And how did that first come about, this meeting of both of you? Were you friends already, or did someone suggest that you might want to play together? Or
It was Liz's cousin. I happened to be in a play with her. I was doing some acting. And she just like saw that I was a musical dude, and obviously knew that Liz was. So she was like, maybe you guys should have a jam. And
rest is history.
Yeah, the rest is, as they say, history. Yeah.
I came back from overseas, and I was actually hunting for a guitarist and someone else to play with, and so you were kind of headhunted.
Yeah. Poached.
Yeah. Sometimes things, I think, just come at the right time.
Yeah.
And you guys have a single that's coming out very soon.
We do. Yeah, it's called Thrill of the Hunt, and it's coming out this Thursday. So, yeah, give us a follow on Spotify and Instagram and all of that kind of stuff, and it'll go live this week. We're really excited.
Yeah, I don't want to be too presumptuous, but might you give us, like, a little sneak peek tonight?
We might give you a little sneak peek. Well, we can play it for you. We've got the guitar and the...
Yeah.
This is something to very much look forward to.
It's going
to
be, like, an acoustic rendition of that. Sounds like a good buzz.
Oh, this is great. This is so good. And then I'm going to cut down the recording just into that.
Nice.
And then I'm going to release it myself.
Oh.
Is that good?
Competition.
Yeah, but I've warned you, so that means that it's fine.
That's wild.
Yeah, we're on board. Yeah. We're on board.
Also, welcome to the studio, Lara from Tempo.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Did you have a good weekend?
Well, I don't even know what's happened. Yeah, I did. I did. Thank you.
I imagine that it was, is it like a busy rehearsal crazy time for you?
Yes. We had a large rehearsal day on Saturday, mm-hmm. and then today I took my daughter to the park,
nice.
And I took my dog to the park.
Nice.
And I went to the gym. But it's like the first day off that I've had in ages.
Yeah.
I'm self-employed. I'm a contractor, so I can take days off whenever I want, but I just haven't been able to.
The dancers have to go to the gym. I thought that, oh, you're a hard worker.
This one does. Yeah, gets old, and I dance only sometimes. Yeah. Yeah, at the moment, maybe not, but I'm trying to encourage my husband to go to the gym more, so I'm sort of becoming... I've become a personal trainer as well.
I've also been told that going to the gym just feels good.
It does feel pretty good. I go to a really great gym. It doesn't have any mirrors in it apart from one in the bathroom. Mm. And it's not really posy. Mm. It's in Newlyn. It's called the People's Gym. It used to be called the Strong Factory. I was more attracted to the Strong Factory.
Yeah, I was going
to
say.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's got a ring to it.
Yeah, I know. But anyway.
It's a bit more down to earth now, I guess, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that was the idea.
Yeah.
But it's the same gym. Moved into a new building. Anyway, yeah. That's what I did.
No, sorry, I'm still stuck in the Strong Factory. I'm like, why would you change a name like that?
I don't understand.
Great.
I know. It's really cute. They've got a little, like, they used to have paintings. They've got sort of inspirational paintings of Arnie and stuff at the moment on the walls, but they used to have the Incredible Hulk, and now they've got a little Incredible Hulk toy that they've put where there's a hole in the wall, so it looks like he's smashing out.
That's great.
Which I kind of like, yeah.
And so you are here to talk to us tonight about a show coming up with Tempo called yep. Death Disco Heartbeat.
Yeah.
And that is a part of the Tempo Dance Festival.
It's part of the dance festival. So I don't work for the festival. I'm an independent choreographer.
Okay.
And my show's been programmed along with a bunch of other really amazing shows as part of the festival. Yeah.
I did not even know that the festival was a thing. I'm feeling very excited.
Oh, it's a really great thing. Is that your McDonald's turning up?
No, it's. I got a text from a Kick-Ass friend, and I thought that it was going to be Kick-Ass related, but it turns out that it's actually just not at all. So I'm sorry that I checked it. So I'm sorry everyone that I can't. There's something wrong with my phone that I can't turn off the sound notifications.
Oh, no.
So like, I normally put it on Do Not Disturb, but if I do, then I'm going to miss out on me and Lane's.
Yeah.
You're now going down round. With me. It's not just me being like I'm getting over it. It's now me and Lane's over it.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So if my phone keeps going off, I'm sorry.
What's it called? Death Disco
Heartbeat.
Heartbeat.
Yeah. Oh. So there's if you mosey on to the Tempo site, you'll see a picture of me and one of my lifetime friends wearing purple tights and disco helmets.
Mm. It is a really, great. Really... I'm just going to turn the monitor around for you. It's a good photo.
So for the listeners at home,
oh,
there's
wow.
two
great.
Women wearing grandma undies with purple tights over top. No tops, but we're turned away so you can only see our backs. We've both got some tattoos and we're wearing very large motorcycle helmets covered in disco ball squares and little disco balls, like they've smashed into it.
Yeah, so tell us a bit about this imagery. What is that showing us about the show?
Well, to be honest, I had to create the image quite a long time before I made the show. Mm-hmm. But the show is... it's quite a surreal kind of dive into me working out a period of time in my life that was a bit tricky, and being that cat who's the other woman in the photo is we've been friends since we were 8, so that's 30 years, and I just kind of felt right to do a friendly and friends not wearing tops giving each other a hug wearing stupid helmets picture. Yeah, I mean, my work, like the way I like to make work is quite image based anyway, so quite often I'll kind of start with an image and then kind of flesh it out. And sometimes I can't really, I don't have a good reason other than I think it looks great.
It's a really, really stunning photo.
Yeah.
I also kind of wanted it to look a little bit like a retro pantyhose commercial, like Razzmatazz or something. Leg Along or something like that.
It's a really, really great colour.
Is there like a tube coming out of someone's head?
Oh.
Or is that just like what I'm seeing?
No, that might be a reflection.
I'm seeing like a curve coming out of the flowers? Or like
No.
Is that like a baton of some kind?
No, well, we've got the flowers. No, there's no batons. There's no tubes.
There is like... I'm not making that up, am I? It looks kind of cool anyway.
Anyway.
sort of remind me of The Matrix.
So could you tell us a bit about the piece? What's it about? What can people expect from it?
It's about loss and resilience and the need to lean into joy. So it's it sounds... I wish I'd written about it a bit better, actually, but again, I wrote about it before I'd actually made it and was still kind of working things out. But it's... about losing people, but also getting older and losing like parts of yourself and old versions of yourself, and all of that as you sort of hurtle through your life, and then also kind of developing resilience. And I was thinking about the best way of doing that, because it's the Uber Eats. I was thinking about the best way.
How's the disco come into it?
So the leaping off point for the show was the death of a friend of mine. He took his own life, which was about 5 years ago, and I didn't want to make a show necessarily about that, but I did kind of feel like I needed to make something sort of inspired by him or our friendship. He was in Canada, and so dealing with that kind of loss here, it was just a really weird way to kind of experience that grieving process without being around anyone else who knew
grieving
him
on the internet.
And
if you're an international person, that's something you have to learn how to do.
100%. So looking onto the little Facebook page that was made for him, and then having a cry and talking to my friend about it, but then
they don't know him. Did you meet overseas?
Yeah. So we, I lived in Canada for a little while, and anyway, so kind of needed to make something around that experience, but also it wasn't until the start of this year that I kind of went, oh, actually, the next part of that is about resilience and about carrying on, and also, you know, and on multiple levels. And so that's the disco part, is this sort of dance party in between. And the heartbeat, well, you know, when someone dies, and especially if it's some under a sort of a tragic circumstance, like suicide or an accident or something, I find that you kind of go into this loop of rewinding the relationship, you know, right back to the beginning. And I feel like doing that, I felt like I was doing that all the time with Joe, sort of, like just pulling it apart from the minute of finding out that he had died to the very moment we made friends. And so I kind of, so heartbeat is the beginning, that's falling in love, even on a platonic level. It's the beginning of life. Disco is the party in between, and death's the end. So I sort of just wanted to put it around the other way.
Did you find that it helps you process your feelings about it and stuff?
It's really funny. I think so. Probably better to ask me next week when it's finished. But about a week ago, I went back to some of the really... First of all, this show was going to be a play. And so I'd done quite a lot of writing about it and kind of written half of it, and then decided it was shit and maybe I should make a dance show about it instead. But I went back to that original writing and pulled really just one thing out, but also realised that I'd achieved quite a lot of what I was trying to say in the writing with the movement anyway. So that was a kind of nice sort of affirmation that I was sort of on the right track with it. But I brought one little piece of writing back in, and that kind of felt like I sort of felt like I'd let Joe back into the show in a way, like I'd sort of needed to put it at arm's length while I kind of did the business of actually making it. And yeah, so it does, like, sounds all terribly indulgent, but hopefully it's really accessible, like the music. Accessible is a really shit word, but
accessible is a great word.
What kind of disco is it? Because I went to a ballet not too long ago that was Bach meets Bowie, and it was, I think, the New York Ballet Academy.
Yeah, I remember that.
And it was, you know, ballet but set to the music of Bowie, and it was just amazing. It was so good. So you're going to have like that kind of disco type of music, but
I'm actually not using any disco tracks, which is around the time that I started to realise it was a dance show, I was also making another show called Disco, which had a lot of disco music in it. And I thought initially that the middle section of the show would have, because disco tracks are super, super long. Like, you know, when I was choosing music for that show, I needed 2 minute numbers, but I was like, these are 13 minutes long. So I was just going to use a really great disco track for the middle section of the show, and then I changed my mind.
It sounds like it's
going to
be good anyway.
Yeah, I think so. Disco Nuts. Well, there's disco helmets, so maybe that covers the disco part of the name.
It's made from like a disco ball.
I hand stuck. I made 5 of those helmets. Only 3 of them in the show, and I hand stuck 6,800.
Oh my goodness!
Little squares, but I also had some disco balls from another installation I'd made a couple of years earlier, and so there
just
are
hanging
actual,
around home.
Yeah,
just a few more.
I've got 200 maybe of those as well. The helmets have some of those on them, some actual little disco balls, and then hand stuck squares.
I'm excited just for the disco balls alone. When I lived in Prague for a year teaching English, and they just had a lot of disco balls when you went out to clubs there.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why.
So great.
Just Prague full of disco balls. It was great.
Yeah.
And one night I got this really good-looking guy who was quite tall to get me a square off a disco ball.
Yeah.
And then it just became like a thing that I just did, almost like an addiction. So every night I went, every Saturday I went out, I'd find like the tallest guy in the bar and be like, can you get me a square for the disco ball? I still have them somewhere, I think, in like a keep box in my home in Nelson.
Yeah.
Just like maybe like 10 or 20 little disco squares all from different bars around Prague.
Oh, I love that. So the initial installation I made with all of the disco balls was for Splore, and I had them kind of strung up like a constellation.
I saw your costumes there, and the first thing I thought was like, they look like Splore costumes.
I actually made those helmets for Splore this year, and it was kind of, I made them with the intention that they'd be for the show, but I kind of used Splore to get them made. But the first installation was I had them like a constellation up in the trees, and it was really, the weather was really shit and windy and stuff, so I'd have to go up each day and kind of like get the ones that had fallen down. And I thought people would steal them, but they didn't. So they'd fall down, and then people would like put them back, like if the string had fallen off, they'd put them back in the tree in like little sort of nooks and crannies and stuff. It was really sweet.
Splore's pretty great.
Unfortunately sometimes the artwork can get damaged or broken or stolen and stuff, but in my case they were really respectful, and it's like probably the one of the cheapest you know, installations that, you know, anyway, it wouldn't have really mattered if they'd trashed it, but you know, unlike some of the others that have been broken that are like worth thousands anyway.
Yeah. So I'm thinking of mirror balls.
Mm-hmm.
What's the lighting like?
Well,
I'm just so like, I'm thinking mirror helmets.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
So Malloy, who is a lighting designer, is designing the show, and they're doing me a real solid, which is great, and I really appreciate. But they came out and watched the show and made a plan on Saturday. and they've got all these really great, I don't know, I'm so shit with all the like technical stuff, but these lovely little directional things that are going to bounce heaps of light off and make a universe, which was what I was hoping would happen.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole reason for Mirables, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys saw Here Lies Love last year that Silo did at the in the Rangatira, but
yeah.
I did a wee bit of movement direction for the singers, and one of the techs was sitting there and they had heaps of disco balls and they were like, looked like they were shooting lasers. Whatever lighting they had on them was so good.
Mm. That was so a pretty cool show.
Yeah.
Was that like the Fat Boy Slim music?
But yeah, it was like him and about Amal and Marcos.
David Byrne as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, no, that was memorable.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. I really enjoyed it as well.
This show, Death Disco Heartbeat, for those who are listening who absolutely have to go and get their tickets and know all the details now, it is 11th and 12th.
Yeah, Friday.
So it's Friday, Saturday.
It's 6:30. You can go home, you know, have your dinner afterwards and be tucked up in bed by 9:30 if you wanted.
Or
you could go out for a party.
I like to, when I'm going in and doing arts-related things, I like to double up.
Yes.
Or even better, triple up.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've had to do that. I've had to do that with a couple of the tempo shows. I saw Utopia number 9 and Dancers with Elders on the same night, which is really great. And there's a big like multi-venue party on the Saturday because it's the closing night of Tempo, and it's spanning the spanning Q Theatre in the basement, like the whole basement, all of the rooms.
That sounds spectacular.
Yeah,
it sounds like a lot of dancing.
Yeah,
just, you know, reason for life.
Yeah.
Say that to people all the time. I'm like, I just want to dance. Not dancing in the way that you dance.
I don't know. I kind of feel like I trained as an actor. It's been a long time since I danced at a very sort of high level, I guess. Mm-hmm. I've got a comedy dance company as well, which is, you know, performance over skill.
Yeah.
Although the dancers, in Dynamotion work real hard to, achieve.
Are you, like, involved in that?
Yeah, that's my other baby.
So that's great. I've seen that before.
Is that the Splore Jam?
We have done Splore, but we do we make theatre shows.
Okay.
Yeah, usually sort of hour-long things based on movie genres or TV shows or that sort of
thing. It's kind of got quite like a Rocky Horror sort of vibe to it.
Yeah, and actually we're performing it Rocky Horror thing soon.
Right.
Tom's sorting out the details of it. Yeah.
Oh, is that the at Hollywood?
Yes.
Man. Yes. Such a great movie. Such a great venue. That's going to be spectacular. I'm going to also bring up the details for that if people want to.
Richard O'Brien is involved in it.
I can't, really?
Yeah, I think so. I can't remember what he's doing. Oh, God, I've probably said the wrong thing. Maybe it's a secret. Or maybe, I don't know. Maybe I've got it wrong.
Wow.
Tom just said, do you want to do this thing? And I said, yes. I'll have to get the Monster Mash costumes out of storage. You just sort it out. I'll do that.
I'll just move the disco balls aside.
Yeah.
While I bring up the details for this as well, Lane and Liz, can you please do a song? Just because I mean, for many reasons, but mainly just because I'd really like to hear one.
I was so excited
when I pulled up and I saw instruments. I was like, I lost the plot a little bit.
We did just come from band practice as well, so.
Ah, very cool.
Nice and warm. Yeah, ready to roll. Lane will just get his guitar. Which song should we play, Lane?
Safe as Houses.
We'll do
Safe as houses.
Yeah.
That is one of my favourite expressions.
Is it?
Ever. Yeah, because it makes no sense. Safe as houses. Every time somebody says that, I'm like,
those that make no sense.
I'm so small town. I'm always throwing idioms at Lane, and he's like, that's not a thing that people say. I'm like, well, if you're 70 and you're from Nelson, you do.
Yeah.
Which I'm not. Yeah, so safe as houses. What does the phrase mean to you? Because I actually feel like I've extended the metaphor in the wrong way, at almost to the point where we ditch this song. So, for me personally.
To me, it's like Like something's real solid.
Yeah.
Safe as houses.
Yeah.
Super solid.
Like, you're golden.
Do you want me to Google it?
Nothing to
and
worry
do you,
about.
And do you take it as safe as a physical house? Because in the song I'm writing about it in terms of it's using the metaphor of like physically being in a house and then it's flipping that around and saying, actually, I'd rather be out in the wilderness. I'd feel safer in the danger because I wouldn't be confined in this unhappy home life.
I think that's a really beautiful way to
flip it around.
Yeah, but
then I looked it up and it was like safe as houses about like, you know, investing in property. And I was like, well, that's like...
Oh, right. Kind of, I was with you. I sort of thought it's safe, like if you're in a house,
you'll
be safe.
Okay, that's what I want. Yeah. What does it say on the...
safe investment?
Yeah, a safe investment.
And then I started trying to write like financial metaphors and it just sounded so bad.
Hang on. Yeah.
Okay, it's saying it is commonly accepted that the Victorian expression as safe as houses means secure with no risk of failure. It shares that meaning with as safe as the Bank of England. England.
So there's like
financial.
Yeah. But then, there's definitely poetry in taking, even if it is about investments and flipping that around. I love it.
Interesting. Should we play it?
Yeah, okay.
Yep. I'll just move away from the mic a little bit.
Yeah, we'll just hope it sounds all right. Cool.
So nice.
Thank you.
What do you call this instrument?
This is a melodica or melodeon.
Oh, I knew that. Yeah.
So those that can't see it, it's like a little mini piano that you blow into.
I love it.
Yeah.
Breath-powered piano.
Yeah, when I lived in South Korea and I didn't have a piano and it wasn't something I could just easily buy and put in my tiny apartment, I went to the kids section of the supermarket and they had these little melodeons and I was like, I remember it was a Snoopy branded one.
I remember that one.
Yeah. Do I still have that one?
That was what she first played when we used to jam.
Oh, wow.
This tiny little...
It wasn't my first, even my first Snoopy melodeon.
Oh, really?
I've lost more melodeons than I can count.
It wasn't your first rodeo.
On nights out in the town. But, yeah, it was the only thing that I could play in a bunch of, like, spoons on books and things.
Yeah. I quite love when you see musicians using, like, toy instruments. Like, Leon Radojkovic used this, like, really cute, plunky, tiny little toy piano thing.
I love the sound of those.
Yeah.
What about the old kazoo? That's a great one.
I'm a big fan of kazoo.
Okay, actually. What is a kazoo?
You can, like, sort of sing through, like, a plastic device. Go,
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
But it sort of sounds like a duck or something.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kazoos as well.
So, obviously, those lethals is, well, not obviously, but I know those lethals is not just the two of you and a guitar and a melodica. Could you give us a bit of background on who else is involved in those lethals and the instruments that they play and what the sound is like all together?
Yeah. Shall I take it away?
Yeah, take it away,
Lynn. All right. Well, there's five of us, so you've already heard me and Liz. And the other dudes, there's a guy called Guy, and he he plays keyboard and trumpet. And
Guy's one of those guys that you see everywhere. He plays with everyone.
Yes, he's extremely talented.
he was involved in Tom Scott's project, Avondale Bowling Club, for the Silver Scroll nominee. Yeah, so he was at the Silver Scrolls for that. Mm-hmm. And then it was Tim Shacklock. Who's like he's the bass player, and he is like a classical wizard. He plays like cello and double bass, and he's like just he practices just crazy amounts. Like I don't know how much. I mean, he's specialized in classical music, but he jams bass for our little pop rock band. And our drummer is overseas. His name's Raj. And he's currently London based, so we're
Rajless.
Yeah, we're Rajless. But we're using fill-ins at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So currently our fill-in is a dude called John Murray, and we had our first jam with him today. So
I was about to ask.
He came like so prepared, like he had already listened to all the songs. He'd taken notes for each one, and he had a little notebook.
Oh, I love that.
It was great. He's obviously a studious young man. So
when we were trying to find drummers, because most drummers in Auckland are pretty busy, and I'd seen him at a gig with Hot Knives. A band called Hot Knives. They're amazing. You should definitely check them out. We're actually playing with them this Thursday.
Yeah.
And at one point, he was just doing this amazing breakdown. Everyone was chanting, John Murray, John Murray. And I thought people were just making fun of, like, a random politician, because I was like, John Murray, that sounds like someone who's running the local office. Yeah. And then I realized it was
rugby commentator or something.
Yeah.
But, yeah, come to our show that we're playing with Round Buddha
and Hot Knives.
Hot Knives.
And you get to see John Murray play twice.
Yeah. So that's on Thursday at
Whammy.
That's a dream
come true. Yeah.
Whammy's such a great venue. Mm. What is it that made you select Whammy as a place to...
It's just kind of like an Auckland staple that we have never played at before.
Mm. I feel like we've played most of the other, like, Auckland indie,
This is probably super naive, but I'm not... It's not my scene, guys. So do you, like... How do you sort of set up your gigs? Do venues ask you, like, once they know about you, or do you sort of approach people, or does someone do that? Do you have a manager? Yeah.
Depends on the venue, but currently we're self managed, so most of our gigs come out of us organising them.
Yeah,
so that's sort of where we're at. Hopefully we blow up and everyone's asking us to play everywhere.
Yeah,
that's the plan. But we've also because I've been studying for a few years, and I've just graduated and I'm now working this year. Yeah. So haven't really had heaps of time to put into the project together, and I've really enjoyed this just the last year, just honing our sound and having the freedom to not, you know, be here or do this. And
yeah,
we can,
yeah,
we spend a lot of time songwriting and figuring out the direction we want to go in sonically.
Sonically.
Is that the right word?
Yeah, dude.
Yes.
Yeah. Sonically.
Because we did used to be a lot more sort of folky country.
Yeah, it was more like...
Yeah, a lot of that. Some of that. Which is fun. But yeah, when you asked about what we sound like together, and together we're electric, so we've got Lane swirling electric guitars, and then most of the time we have electric bass, sometimes we use double bass.
Yeah.
And then obviously drums, and then synthy sounds on the keys, getting quite... You know,
yeah, so the sound, like, as of this year, has sort of gone, we're sort of trying to make a bit more of a, just like a distinctive...
just more pure, like, indie pop rock type thing.
Yeah, pretty much.
What is it that, has that just been quite a natural progression for you into that kind of genre of music, or what has led to that for you?
Sort of like a meeting of our songwriting styles and, like, influences, like... Okay. Recently, we've been sort of pushing the idea that we're somewhere between Fleetwood Mac and Tame Impala.
I can totally hear that. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Obviously, so without the electric sound, it's harder to gauge
that.
Yeah,
it's just the guitar.
I mean, I have a very, like, folky kind of songwriting approach.
But, yeah, that comparison actually came from a friend of mine who I work with at a restaurant. He came to one of our gigs, and afterwards he's like, "Oh, you guys sound like cross between Tame Impala and Fleetwood Mac." And I was like, holy shit, that is
it.
I love when people hit the nail on the head like that. Kat Rooker, who's the artistic director of Tempo, saw a run of my show and said, "Oh, it teeters between heartbreak and hilarity." And I was like, yes,
that's a great description.
Much better description than I gave on the website. So I'm going to use it.
It's those great moments when someone just sees exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, just gets it.
100%. Hey, I'm just going to play a song and let's have a little break. We were just talking about Tom Scott and his project. That guy from Those Lethals was involved in. He goes under the name Avondale Bowling Club is his project, and he released an album last year, which is just absolutely superb. He won the Tate earlier on this year. Wow, very well deserving of that. And then was one of the top five nominees at the Silver Scrolls this week. This is his song Years Gone By. It's a little bit of a long one. It's a bit over 7 minutes, but it's absolutely stunning. And I love those moments when, you know, I'm sure that you hear this all the time about the length of a song in terms of radio play.
Yeah.
It's so important. I work with a band, Minnie Simmons, and we've got a song right now which called Sunflower Fields that has been released on their, as a part of their debut album, and it's quickly become the most streamed song since the release of that album from the album.
Yeah.
Even though it's the longest song, that video that everybody, if you've got Facebook, you're probably getting spammed right now with that. We're learning who our audience is through spamming everyone, which is a good thing to do, because you learn who actually is wanting to watch it, and then you can be like, okay, cool, how do we reach them to actually get our music out there? But their song is so long, and when I first started working with them, I was like, the song's too long, we can't release it. And man, have I been proved wrong, because people love it.
Yeah.
And Years Gone By, that's another example of that, obviously, as well. The classics like Stairway to Heaven and Bohemian Rhapsody and so many.
And they got Bruce Hopkins did a cool version of this for the Silver Scrolls. Someone sent me the video of it.
Yeah,
yesterday.
Stunning.
Yeah.
So stunning, yeah. And all of those are online as well if you want to go check it out, because it's well worth it. This is Years Gone By, Avondale Bowling Club, and we will see you, hear from you in a couple of minutes.
Tree down and past the top while I watch a lifetime pass me by, looking back on old days, glossy eyes.
watching years go like my auntie's mom. We used to sit up in the car park and rhyme. Now a night like that is hard to find. Looking back on old times, I can't rewind. Talking to my old friends, they aren't alive. No more the years gone by. Talking about years gone by. Let's take it all the way back to 84. Let's hear it for the boy plaguing through the war. Let's hear it for the boy crawling on the floor in an old Willie in the state hall. He walked in 85, he ran in 86. We flew from a kingdom united into a land in 287. We settled in 88. We moved into a place called Avondale. First day in school in 89. It was me, myself, and I. Cause my mother couldn't find my baby brother. Must have lost him like that time at the supermarket. 5 candles on my Donatello cake. Celebrate life, sell a tape up on my hammer tape. 1990, I was a plumber with a pipe dream. Sight of screen, hunting for mushies that were lime green. Light speed to 91, it was the year I met this girl and fell in love. Her name was China, and then we jump and bootleg pump. In 92, my drunk dad jumped ship on mom. In 93, I won my first fight like a D-O-double-G. Still mad at the man I wanted to be. In 94, got a hiding and I tried to hide, but you can't keep running away. In 95, so I tried my eyes to all eyes on me. Number 9 on rewind, stacking my pocket money up to 9-6. Blew it all on 6-4. Blew my ocarina loud, swinging sword with the force. 97 hit the core, got slicker with the saucer. Vocal cords dropping, I got slicker with the bronze. Figure 4 and 98, hit the floor in 99. Doing 90s in my class, trying to rhyme on the side way back when I had it red and black. Sworn dry in my master hatchback, traveling back in time. Talking years. Yeah, the year was 2001. I bumped that 2001. Moved out of my mom's house, flunked out like a bum. First year I got some, that was that first year I got sprung. Next year I got dumped, then that whole year I got drunk. That was 02, then 03, my old man got done. For some dumb shit, got 1 year, and that year I got numb. Then 05, he got out and got out of it at once. Then 06, my homie hung in the park where we all hung. Yeah, my shit got fucked up that year, my shit got real rough that year. Horse it on my birthday year, fuck that year. What that year, it taught me, who the people that can fool me. For the people that just corny, when the phony homie disown me, then call me when he saw me on the cover of some magazine. I'm too brother, how you been? It's been a minute, I ain't seen you since we was at the screen and moved into 2007. And the solar blur from then to 2011. I was on a bender that went on 4 years long, celebrating for the first win I ever got. That was the same year LeBron won. Short run and the long run. Woke up when the swan sung her song and hit the gong. I was gone, they shot me down from the top of the poppy. Got too cocky, that melancholy got me and never got me. But everybody needs somebody, everybody needs some Whitney. So when I met her, I said the ring. We gave it a ring, then I said the king. Me, that was 2013. We moved out of the city, had about 2014. Palace in 2050, hit me hard, losing Ziggy. But the midi stuck with me through the dark. Then my son came out, I called him Quincy. And now I watch his eyes, watching mine, watching life on rewind. Too divine, in one line. In the same neighborhood I walked in 89. Raising beers for the cheers, saying here's to the years. It's gone by. We'll be right back.
So that there was Years Gone by Tom Scott, Avondale Bowling Club, off his album Avondale Bowling Club, which was released last year, which I think everybody in the studio, once the song was put on, was in agreement is a fantastic album. I would absolutely recommend going and having a listen to that one during the week. I would love to hear a little bit about your history and how you got into the arts, if you would love to tell us your stories. Lara, starting with you, have you always been interested in dance?
I guess I kind of feel like dance was my first artistic language as a youngster, mm-hmm. and then it kind of became like in Dunedin in the 80s and early 90s. I feel like if you weren't going to pursue, at least the sort of world that I inhabited, if you weren't going to pursue sort of ballet as a profession, it was, you weren't really offered anything else. Like, I didn't even really know until I came here to Unitech to study acting that you could study to be a contemporary dancer. I was like, what is a contemporary dancer? I didn't even know. So when I sort of got to a point where it was quite clear I wasn't going to be a classical ballerina, mm-hmm. I did think about being a modern dancer for a while, which is kind of an early, it's like a contemporary dancer in a way. But once that sort of became clear it wasn't my path, I decided, I'll be an actor instead. I did speech and drama and stuff like that.
I did speech and drama too.
Yeah, the old Trinity College ones.
Yeah, I've got my ATCL. I've met like no one who has that in the modern world. it's kind of a dying thing, you do lots of elocution type things. And then you
can, like, when you do your letters, you can kind of do sort of performance-based or, like, teaching-based, which is what I did.
I did the teaching.
You sort of learn how to, like, fix
speech impediments and you stuff. Learn, like, the anatomy of the mouth and the physiology of breathing. And
I still when I meet my kids' friends who have speech impediments, I think to myself, I could fix that. Yeah. Is it just a few tongue exercises? but you sort of can't always just bowl in and do that.
I could fix you.
I can. So then I went off to London straight after high school, and I had sort of a vague plan of maybe doing law, which just seems ridiculous now. And then my dad sent me the application for Unitech, and so I was too lazy to put together an audition video, but I was doing a play at the time where I played two different characters, so I just sent them a video of that and got in. Yeah, and so I came here, then went and did a little postgrad certificate in acting Shakespeare in London.
Oh, wow.
At the Royal Academy.
Wow.
And then
was that as cool as it sounds? Because it sounds amazing.
It was pretty amazing. It was, it's a dream school to go to. And I had looked into it, but it was really, even though I had a British passport, it was still going to be really expensive. I was still sort of classified as an international student. And so I just, decided to do Unitech instead. And also when I moved to London, I was 18. And at the end of that year, I was like, I'm just really tired of adulting by myself so far away from my family. I'm like a really independent person. And I was like, I don't want to live in the same city as them, but I'd quite like them to be just a 2-hour plane ride away. And then when I did that course at RADA, there were 9 different nationalities in our group, and all of them sort of already professional actors or just out of drama school, and we're all mostly still in touch. One of them's become this really famous actor in Korea, and he's in big fashion magazines and stuff, and I love it. He's got a different name now than he had back then. I came back and did the underemployed actor thing for a little bit, and then it wasn't really until 2012 when we started Dynamotion and I started choreographing the Wet Hot Beauties, which sort of came out of this weird scenario of teaching this group of Buddhist women a hip-hop dance for this meeting they were doing on Waiheke Island. So I spent the summer going back and forth to Waiheke teaching this dance. And then one of those Buddhist women was also a wet hot beauty. And so, like,
what is a wet hot beauty?
A wet hot beauty is
aside from what I think it is.
Sort of what you think it is, probably. It's a community group of mostly women who are water ballerinas, and we haven't done one for a couple of years, but we turn Parnell Baths into a theatre and do a big show in the kids' pool. So it's like synchronized swimming, but in the kids' pool, so it's more like elegant wading to pop music and stuff.
Wow.
That sounds incredibly hard, but amazing to watch. Water is hard to begin.
The teching days, they do get some of them wear wetsuits and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And we had 85 women and one man in the last show. It was really, it's such an epic experience, because it starts, we have to sort of, when we're making a show, we sort of have to start around June, July to kind of nut out what songs we want to use and if there's a narrative or if there isn't, which there wasn't in the last show. There was kind of an emotional narrative, and sort of plan it out, and then we start rehearsals in September, October, and then do the show in February, March kind of time, meeting once a week or twice a week once it comes to summer. So it's massive. And then there's all of these people who aren't, most of them aren't performers, and so they worry about all sorts of things like, I don't know if you've noticed, but not everyone in our line has not got their arms up here or not doing this, or, you know, how am I supposed to get over to the other side of the pool and stuff like that. And as well as all, like, because it's so community focused. And the last show we made was about sort of our collective experiences of being modern women. It sort of touched most of the performers quite deeply as well. So they'd come and tell you their stories about what it meant to them or what they're going through. And there's breakups and miscarriages and pregnancies and all sorts of stuff. And so it's quite kind of overwhelming at the end of it. But it's amazing. It's an amazing thing to do and to watch. And
that sounds quite life-changing as
well.
Yeah,
and it was quite... the experience of meeting them was pretty life-changing for me, because it kind of gave me license, I think, to kind of start thinking about myself as a choreographer, which I still feel a bit impostery about. But then so much of my work, my theatrical work as well, is choreography or movement direction. So I guess I just have to shut up and accept it.
No, but I think that it's okay for me to say that I feel as though that is a shared experience as well about being a woman. I got told today that men and women are treated equally in society, and it was bad.
LOL.
who told you that?
A man?
Yeah, a heterosexual white man. And I said, you a very wealthy heterosexual white man. And I said, well, you would say that.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, there's almost, I always find it quite interesting when that comes up in that context, and you're like, well, they're not really surprised by this situation.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, it's only my whole lived experience that says that.
Yeah,
and maybe
it's
not the case.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Kick Arts has this really beautiful way of getting a bit political, and I really love that, because I don't think, you know, talking about the arts, I'm not sure you can escape from it.
And
even that, in it not being political, is kind of political sometimes.
Yeah,
100% deep. A lot of our songs, I write a lot of the lyrics, although I think Lane and I do come together on, like, talking about the theme of the songs and stuff like that, but they're definitely political, and they're, I try to make them kind of actively political, but I do write essentially in, like, a very poetic kind of way. But this is the first time where I feel like the songs we're doing, it's not like a breakup album or a love album, or it's just about every song is, you know, to do with the environment and politics and feminism, and but hopefully in a...
Is that a Is that a conscious choice, or is that kind of just a reflection of where you're at as a person or an artist?
I think it is partly where I'm at, because I've been with a lovely doctor for about 4 years, so there's not a lot of heartbreak and angst going on. There's the occasional song about that, but I think a lot of the singers that I and songwriters I admire the most, you know, had quite strong political stands, and I just wanted to do that, and so it's kind of a combination.
Did you? I'm gonna. My that's pretty much the end of my story. I've made a bunch of dance.
It's a beautiful story, though.
And still
it sounds like a great adventure. What I loved about your story is that, and the way that you articulate your story is, it just sounds like a journey that you're on. And I want to know what happens next. So come back.
Sometimes I think to myself, if I was a bit more single-minded. Like, I know there's a certain type of actor, and I know quite a few of them, who are just so sort of focused, and they're like they're sort of actors, and they do actually tend to take themselves quite seriously a lot of the time. And sometimes I'm like, oh, I should be more like, if I was more like that, I'd be more successful at acting. In terms of like getting jobs and being known, maybe perhaps not in terms of giving a performance. But it's just not who I am. Mm-hmm. I do kind of like to just go, what is landing in front of me? Okay, that's quite interesting. We'll give that a shot. And then
I can so relate to that.
Yeah.
I'm a yes man.
Yeah.
Just whatever the next adventure is, come at me.
But I
can so relate to you as well in terms of like my journey in the arts community as well. Sometimes I think if I just focused on one thing, I can really nail that. But instead, I'm kind of doing an okay job at many, many things.
And I actually think I recently gave a speech about sort of this.
Yeah.
But one of the things that I was thinking about in it was that, because I used to really hate being called sort of well-rounded is at school and things, or being sort of a jack of all trades kind of thing. But I actually think it's, in the arts, I think it's a superpower.
Mm.
Like, unless you're sort of phenomenal at one thing and people are recognising that, if you can multi-task, or you can kind of, if you can work across genre or whatever, then you, like, there's longevity in that.
Absolutely.
Because you can stay in it, you can claw yourself, claw your way through one way or another.
Opportunity as well. You can get a lot more opportunities and really fulfilling, fun opportunities when you can wear a lot of hats.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I reckon.
And from a practical standpoint, and lots of artistic endeavours at like a local Auckland level, you end up having to help with various parts of, you know, like we're making music, but I do like the design and making a video.
Well,
and
managing
like that,
yourselves and stuff, and you learn heaps from doing that. Yeah. It's the same when you make theatre shows or dance shows, and you have to do the producing yourself, which kind of sucks. It would be okay if that's the only thing you had to do, but you're organising all of the other stuff as well. But it does,
preaching to the choir on that one.
Yeah, the great thing about it is that it like once you're sort of through the stress of having to do it. Like it, you know, like it really adds to, you know, your resources in terms of what you can do and what you understand about the industry and all of that stuff.
There wouldn't be many people, I think, working in the arts community or coming out of the arts community that can't do a lot of things.
Because
you just have to. Like, how do you guys find that? Who does your marketing and decides, you know, what distributor you're going to go with and all that kind of? Because you're self-managed, aren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you do that?
Raj actually has a marketing degree. Who's our
drummer? That would help.
So that's
a lot.
Very helpful.
Yeah.
And he's like still like a contributing member to the band whilst in London, like not even playing in the band, which is pretty crazy because you'd think maybe he wouldn't be doing that. But
it's kind of testament to what your sort of culture in the band must be, I reckon.
Yeah,
we're very lucky.
And Liz has taken it upon herself to like upskill in like numerous ways. She's been making posters and like, you know, using like digital media and like.
I just made my first video, which should come out in the next week or so.
Yeah,
and I've spliced together like some, like an old like film noir film, which is like copyright free one. And then like nature videos of bugs.
Yeah. Oh, great.
And then some footage that myself and a friend of ours, Luke Darling, who's a photographer, took.
And that's
so
for
it's
our,
really
our,
is that for
our
the single?
Upcoming single, Thrill of the Hunt.
Yeah.
Out Thursday. With video in tow. Yeah.
I think that I do have a couple more questions about this, but can we actually hear the song? And I'll just ask some questions while you're getting ready. Yeah.
Sweet.
I think that my experience in the music industry and in the arts community has been you have to get really good at asking for help. And you're asking for people to listen to your songs. And do you have a bit of a support? Like, what's your support network around you in terms of, you know, the team that you have that help you do everything that you need to do?
What's our support, Liz?
I mean, obviously you've got the five of you. You've got like this little family. Is that a big part of that?
I feel like I mean, we have lots of friends that do arty things, so that's good. I've got a good friend of mine who's an actor, and like it's good to talk to her about how she mentally copes and just practically organises things. And
we've also got quite useful like friends who are willing to like donate their time in terms of like designing things and like costume stuff.
But it is because I work in the medical world, and I do sometimes think I need to accrue more like artistic friends, because a lot of the time I'll, you know, go to talk to the person that I'm out for coffee with, and I'll say blah 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 this about the music world, and they're just like music. And they're so supportive and lovely, and they'll be the first to listen, you know, and come to the shows and stuff, but
just can't relate.
I'll be like, okay. We'll still play the song. It's called Thrill of the Hunt, and we can kind of tell you the story about how we wrote it now or afterwards, or
should we just hone into it?
I turned off my mic and then I was talking. Let's just get into it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, cool. And then people can try to figure out what it's about and you can tell us afterwards.
Storm. Ooh,
Started off as an idea of lanes. Do you want to talk about that?
So I am the original concept, because it became something else, but Liz kind of worked off my original idea, which was inspired by a friend of mine who had night terrors. And so just wake up in the middle of the night and screaming. And I found out what it was about, and it was a pretty hefty fear of death.
Yeah,
and that was obviously a pretty it's quite an inspirational topic, I guess. And I kind of just I was keen to try writing a song like nothing to do with me. I was like all about something else that I was like witnessing, not being like my feelings are this, my feelings are that, just completely imagining his experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so I came up with a little song idea, and I took it to Liz, and. What did you do?
The thing that I liked the verse and the line that stuck with me was "It's inevitable," and I like writing stuff about like big existential concepts like that, and I like writing like a poetic type of approach where it could mean multiple things to different people, speech and drama mm-hmm. background. Yeah. and then I started writing kind of on the idea of the night terrors type of idea. I had an ex actually who had they were a horror writer.
It's actually very common. Yeah. Night terrors. Mm. We don't really talk about it. It's a
scary thing. Like they were a horror writer, so they were always watching scary movies, mm-hmm. writing scary stuff, and obviously like that's crept into their sleep. And so I really identified with like the story that Lane had told me. And then as I started writing it, I started thinking about just fears that I experienced myself. And and then I guess as a woman, when you think about fear, it's actually like a constant thing that you carry with you kind of all the time. Like even if you're just walking, you know, through a car park at night or, mm-hmm. you know, like every day when I go home, like because I live by myself, like at the moment my partner's on placement somewhere else. So, you know, it's like that constant carrying of fear. And then just as I wrote about it, in my head, I imagined this campy, like, film noir, like, mm-hmm. you're being chased. And then, and I thought about, you know, how do I manage that moment of trying to be brave, but also trying to allow myself to be scared. And then I kind mm-hmm. of was mad that it seems like every movie and film you watch, women are always like, I'm so scared. But then I am so scared. Yeah, that line about doe-eyed heroine, pixels whirring, and, you know, sometimes you feel like that is you. Yeah. So that's how the song became the song. But then it's a boppy little...
It's kind of like the actual sound of the song plays against the topic matter. It's a little bit like bittersweet, boppy, happy, you know? Yeah.
But we're all going to die.
That's kind of a nice way into those topics, though, I think.
Yeah.
I really
treat it lightly, you know?
Yeah. And it's sort of... I was having a conversation with someone recently about this, that sort of idea in theatre making. And there's sort of like... I mean, maybe it's also just your style. It's like what you like to do. My shows are kind of similar, but... like there's a care for the audience. You're not taking them somewhere like super dark and then leaving them there to sort of find their own way out, you know. It's like going here, let's think about it, or let's talk about it in a lighter
here's the training wheels
manner. That's something to ponder on.
Do you always write your songs together like that?
Most of the songs are just like Liz is quite a, what's the word, when prolific like writer. She just like writes lots of poetry and things like that. And I'm so how it normally works is that we get together and she just like reads out of her notebook.
I have in my brain it's like, and because I've been, you know, probably 4 or 5 bands, and I have like an encyclopedia in my head of all the lyrics that I've written. Some of them are actually physically on a computer, and I'll go, oh, that sparks that, and I'll go keyword and search it up. But Lane will write something and it will kind of inspire me, and I'll go zing and kind of go into that song that's usually pre-written as a whole. But I quite like Lane writes really interesting melodic and structural kind of stuff, and then you could so easily just sing exactly what you'd expect over what he's writing. But I like taking a song that I've finished and written myself and imprinting it on top, because then you're getting a melody that's not necessarily the thing that, you know, you'd expect.
Yeah, and I imagine that kind of may give you surprises sometimes as well.
Yeah.
And it is kind of like, it's almost like sampling. Like, she's like, oh, I've got this song from there that never became a thing. We planted over that, and then it's like a new thing. It's like, oh, we made a baby.
So, Lane, your songs usually come out on a guitar?
Yeah. Like I have written, like, quite a few songs, like, with me singing and stuff like that. But in terms of how this band works, I'm more recently I've been just, like, sort of composer, guitarist, chord slinger.
Yeah. And do you sometimes have, like, with those songs that you've written, do you sometimes have the idea for the melody and stuff in your head already, or do you just...
Yeah, often they're, like, complete songs with chord structures and stuff, and often they can be songs I've played in other bands that... Like, there's even songs that we've written which it'll be, like, from a stompy country... bluegrassy band that I was in, but just the melody just fits.
Awesome.
The cool thing about music is that people don't realize how kind of similar everything is. Or how complementary, like, things you would never think are just the ideas. You just go, that thing, cool. People didn't see that, but I mashed my hands together. Just give me a commentary there.
Well, we are coming towards the end of the show, but if you were willing, I think we have time for one more if you had one, because I'd love to hear one, and I'm sure everybody listening would as well.
Yeah, we have prepared one more.
Which song is this?
The last one is called This Terrifying World, which is kind
really,
of...
Really happy, like, topics.
It's a little David Bowie kind of tribute in my mind. That's a line that he said in an interview, that he said if he was a young person today, it would be a rather terrifying world to inhabit. And so it's kind of, a song about what it means to be part of our generation facing a giant climate change and multiple other challenges. And I feel like I should, like, apologize to baby boomers before I sing it, but also, you know, I love them, and it's like an attack. It's just, anyway.
It's just an observation.
It's just an observation that we could, anyway.
I don't think I've ever heard someone say, I feel like I should apologize to baby boomers.
when you're ready.
Yeah.
Yes. Sorry, baby boomers.
so good.
Thank you.
Sorry, baby boomers. All right, well, we just have a couple minutes left of the show. It is time for shameless promotion. If you wouldn't mind giving all of the... Let's start with Lane and Liz. If you wouldn't mind giving all the details to your single, the show, what can people see of you guys next? What's coming up for you?
Okay, well, we've got some exciting stuff for you, world. we've got two shows this week. We're playing at Whammy on Thursday. And that's sort of our single release day slash show. That's the single Thrill of the Hunt. We just played that earlier. And that's pretty exciting. It's the first stuff we will have released in quite a while. So look out for that. And then we're playing Whangarei at the Butter Factory on Friday night, which will be our first time playing there. So that's ticking that off the list. And then we have our final show of the tour in Wellington in a couple of weeks. And that's a pretty special show, which...
That's on the 19th at Caroline, and it's a collaboration with the Anthropocene, which is a digital art magazine for that's kind of environmentally political type of magazine, but art on that. So it's an art show meets music on that theme.
Yeah, so it's sort of like a gig slash art exhibition in Welly at Caroline.
Give us a follow on all the places, Instagram mainly, and then Facebook and Spotify for the single, and we'll keep everyone updated.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
And people can take a dive into the depths of those Lethals and check out your old stuff and check out your new stuff and see the experience, the evolution themselves.
Hit us up. Hit us up on the interwebs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Death Disco Heartbeat. Where can people find the details for that?
You can go on to tempo.co.nz or qtheatre.co.nz and book tickets from either website. You'll be taken through to Q. Anyway, there's a Facebook event under the same name, and if you want to see some of the weird hats and things that I make and costumes, then you can find me at make.do.lew on Insta.
Fantastic. Thank you, everybody, for coming in. Thank you, Lara, Liz, and Lane.
Thanks for having us.
I wish that I had done that
always
earlier
a good
on.
Time.
It's got a good ring to it, eh?
You guys need someone else in your band.
Now, thank you, everybody, for listening to another episode of Kick-Ass. Next week, Marianne and myself will be back for another show. If you have something related to the arts community that you're wanting to come in and talk to us about, send us an email on kickass1 or at gmail.com. Otherwise, you can send us a message at Kick-Ass on our Facebook page. We will have the podcast up over the next couple of days. It is available 5 minutes after the show if you want to listen to it again. I'm just going to take us out now with a local artist. He's from Wellington. His name's Lontalius, and he's absolutely fantastic. He has just released an album on Friday, and it is well worth a listen. This is his song, Make My Dreams Come True. I have been Georgia. This has been Kick-Ass. Thanks for listening. Have a great rest of your Sunday. It's not quite the end of the weekend.
good.